From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. You probably know that Governor Brown signed a first-of-its-kind bail reform law this week, ending cash bail in California. The effort to overturn that law is already underway. Meanwhile, the police use of force bill that came after the Stephon Clark shooting has been stopped for the time being. This is Governor Brown's final session as governor, and the session ends tomorrow night at midnight, so it's crunch time. Cap Radio State Government reporter Ben Bradford is with me for this week's Capital Chat. Hi, Ben.
Hi there.
So what's happening with the police shooting bill? Is it right to say it failed, or is stalled a more technically correct term?
I think that either of those is fine. The fact of the matter is that the Senate leader, Democratic Senate leader Tony Atkins, announced late last night that it is not going to pass this session. So it's shelved. It failed. It didn't happen. Now, what she said is that a, quote, critical problem remains unaddressed. And she said that basically there just wasn't enough time to figure out a compromise agreement that was going to be acceptable to law enforcement and also be acceptable to civil liberties advocates. And, you know, this use of force bill came out. It was introduced just a few weeks after the Stephon Clark shooting in Sacramento.
Right.
And so this was a major push to change a state law that has not changed since the 1800s. The California use of force law goes back that far.
And that only happened back in March. So we're talking a couple months.
Yeah.
But is this an idea that just hasn't reached its time yet? It'll be returned and revisited next session?
Well, so that's what Atkins says. She says that they're going to introduce a bill in January. But, you know, I will say that the law enforcement lobby is one of the most influential and most powerful at the state capitol. And it's hard to see, they typically push back against changes to their conduct. So a good example of that would be a slew of different bills involving body cameras. Now, there's a body camera bill moving forward this year so far that I have not been covering to the same extent. But over the last few years, we saw many efforts to dictate how both the footage from body cameras get used and also just when they have to be turned on and what are the policies around that. And those have almost completely failed to pass in any kind of forms that dictate to police agencies. So then when you get to an issue like use of force and when an officer can fire their gun or use deadly force, you can see how it's difficult to even put in place regulations on body cameras. It gets even thornier when you get to that very divisive issue.
Let me move to another interesting issue. There's a bill that passed that relates to accomplices in crime, and I found some of this fascinating.
So the bill says that murder convictions only apply to people who are, the actual killer or, say, someone who hired them or knew a murder was going to occur and helped it occur. And that's a change to what's called the felony murder rule. And what that is the felony murder rule says that if someone is participating in another felony, like, so let's say a robbery, and their accomplice kills someone in the course of it, then everyone involved in the robbery is guilty of murder. So, critics of the rule say people can be incidental to a crime, not even there for it, with no knowledge that someone intends to kill someone else, and then end up in prison for life or on death row.
And isn't there a profile of the typical accomplice or a common profile of accomplices?
One of the stats that we've seen from some civil liberties groups is that if you look at women who are in prison for murder, the stat that was discussed last night is that more than 70% are from the felony murder rule, and their average age is 20. Yeah, exactly.
And their average age is 20.
Yeah.
All right. So that one passed last night. That one's still on the move.
Yeah, it's going over to the Senate now and then to Governor Brown if it passes there.
Let's talk about bail reform. Jerry Brown dealt with prison overcrowding in California as a major issue in these last two terms, particularly in the third term. So was this bail reform effort in the mix of approaches that he's been talking about and considering for a number of years?
So it's interesting. Brown has been critical of the bail system even since his first stint as governor. But more about the injustice of being able to get out of jail based on how much money you have and having to owe money for not having enough money, right? I mean, people who go to a bail bondsman typically have to pay about 10% of that loan, even if they're found not guilty. So he's been critical of that for decades. You know, there has been a push in California, partially in response to a court order finding California's prisons unconstitutionally overcrowded,
right,
to reduce that overcrowding. Certainly, the advocates on the civil liberties side, the opponents of bail on the civil liberties side, had initially pushed for this bill as a way of reducing the number of people being held in pretrial detention. We also saw, you know, many of those supporters, including, for instance, the ACLU and Human Rights Watch, split away because they're not convinced that under the final version of the bill that will happen. So the overcrowding issue, I think, is one that interplays with bail.
Not necessarily a direct connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I understand what you're saying. And by the way, the governor did sign that into law, the end of the cash bail system in California. It is historic for the state. It's historic for the country. There is not yet a review system that would be required for it to be put into practice yet. Meanwhile, there's already pushback. There's already a retaliation effort.
So the bail industry, I mean, this is an existential threat to the bail industry, right? I mean, without bail, what are they going to do? And so they have already announced that they're going to push a referendum. They're going to do everything that they can to overturn it. If they can get the signatures and they can qualify a referendum, it'll freeze the law's implementation, although the law is already not supposed to go into effect. The new bail system's not supposed to start until October of next year. But as you said, there is a risk assessment system that's supposed to replace the bail system, and the Judicial Council, which is a part of the administration of the courts, is still working through exactly what that would look like. And then counties would have to impose their own. So there's a lot of infrastructure that would have to go into place in a relatively short time.
In the meantime, nothing changes until all of that is in place.
Right.
Right. All right. Lawmakers are tackling a lot of issues. Let's move to SB 100, a bill that might not be on anybody's radar, but is significant for a number of reasons.
Well, you know, this is the fourth big climate change bill that we've seen in 4 years in the legislature. You know, we saw going back to 2015, one of the first significant bills that I covered was SB 350, which raised the state's renewable energy goals, making it 50% in 2030. And doing a whole bunch of other climate change related things. We saw last year the extension of the cap and trade system. Before that, we saw just an increase of the amount of greenhouse gases the state wants to remove from the air and the goal for doing that, which encompasses more than just the electric sector. So this year we saw and in the last few days, actually yesterday, we saw this go to the governor, SB 100, which is a bill that actually raises that renewable energy standard, the amount of electricity that our utilities have to get from renewable energy, raises it again. They raised it in 2015 to 50% in 2030. Now they're raising it to 60% in 2030. And then longer term from that, it says that state agencies have to start planning and pursuing 100% zero emission electricity by 2045. So by mid-century, get completely off of carbon emitting electric generation. And the only reason I say carbon emitting and, you know, zero emission rather than renewable energy is because there are some complicated things in there. For instance, the state has a lot of hydropower, which we don't typically count as renewables, even though, of course, you know, it is renewable. And then also the bill would allow for instance, carbon capture technologies, which really are not cost effective yet.
All right. So that's going to the governor, to be signed.
Well, no, that's interesting.
I know. We don't usually predict, but I think under the umbrella of climate change.
Well, you would think that, except that last year when I was in China with the governor and we were discussing this bill, he was first on stage at a climate change summit and refused to comment on it one way or the other. And then I asked him about it afterward, and he had this kind of wishy-washy statement.
I think that's good, but I don't want to minimize now. Our 2030 goals are quite daunting. How do we get to about 265 million tons of greenhouse gases when we're at 430 or thereabouts?
I don't want to minimize now. He sounds like the parent who's saying, well, do good on this, and then we'll give you that next responsibility.
Yeah. And you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I don't think that people doubt the most of the scientists that I've talked to don't doubt the ability of utilities to continue to ramp up their renewable energy. I mean, they're pretty much on track to first they're going to hit the 2020 goals, and then it ramps up from there to go from a third renewable energy.
So is he just addressing the pace of it?
Well, It is the pace, but it's also this idea that, you know, California has so much renewable energy at this point that there are certain times where we have so much coming in and we're not using enough electricity that the state actually has to sell energy, not sell. They pay other states to take our energy, right? So if you just keep putting on more renewables, the question is, you know, what do you do about that? And the idea is that technologies can continue to account for that as time goes on. But what if they don't? So it's just putting that whole puzzle together.
All right. I'm talking with Cap Radio state government reporter Ben Bradford, joining me for this week's Capital Chat. In fact, the last time that he'll be joining us for a Capital Chat, because just as the governor is in his final session of his final time in the governor's office, you're here just for a number of hours, maybe through the end of session tomorrow, because you've taken a new job and it's a new national job. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, definitely bittersweet. I've really loved living in Sacramento and, you know, covering the Capitol. It's just a fascinating experience. But yeah, it's exciting. I'm going to be moving over to, you'll hear me on Marketplace.
We'll still hear you on NPR. And I think it's interesting that you worked in politics in Washington. You covered politics in North Carolina and now in California. But Marketplace is a broad business show. So how do you think your experience and your knowledge might inform what you'll be doing next?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. So, you know, on one hand, I have done business coverage before when I was in New York, and also when I was in North Carolina, I did some business coverage. But just beyond that, I just think that, you know, I'm fascinated by this country influence and power and how it shapes how we live our lives. And I think that there are two big levers on that, right? One is politics and the other is business. And so it'll be interesting to switch over. And of course, I'm not going to forget the interplay. You know, we've been talking today about, you know, the bail industry, right? And just how that affects, you know, and we're talking about campaigns, we're talking about money, talking about the law enforcement lobby, how much money goes to lawmakers in addition to just the, you know, the public pressure that they can exert. So that doesn't go away simply because I'm covering business. It's still there, just through a different lens.
Well, you've had some remarkable assignments while you've been here at Cap Radio, including a trip with the governor to China.
Right. Yeah.
A little bit of sparring in the back seat with him about the word legacy. And you had a visit with him to some pandas.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we just heard a little bit of tape from when we were in China. We asked him about that bill a year ago. And the China trip, though, the pandas had to be just the most surreal experience. You know, you're there. We were still jet lagged. We'd been in the country for probably 24 hours at that point. And here we are at the world's largest, essentially kind of like zoo for pandas. And I'm there with Jerry Brown, who is kind of, you know, looking around and just not at all impressed.
So they sit around a lot. Well, in the wild, they have to keep moving, don't they?
You know, and later on, he was like, yeah, they're cute. They kind of remind me of my dog, Calusa. And it was just weird. I mean, it was this weird, it ended up being this kind of blip in this, you know, trip that otherwise involved all of these, you know, elaborate state visits. And that actually was an elaborate state visit because, of course, the pandas are very protected. And Brown and two of California's top energy regulators, the head of the Air Resources Board and the Energy Commission, all went in. They had to like wear scrubs to go and hold a baby panda. And their whole entourage, you know, I like snuck in for a second and I got kicked out. The whole entourage got kicked out. People were saying like, oh, this could be an international incident. You guys have to get out of this room.
Oh, geez. And so, in the atmosphere of pandas, where virtually every person in the world would go, oh, look at that. Even you would. And it's just so funny to think about. How does Jerry Brown react to that? And what? His comment was, they sit around a lot.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. All right. So you're on to the new job as of next week?
Well, I'll start there next month. And in the meantime, I have to move to Los Angeles wrap up here. And
I can't let
things.
You go without asking for a prediction, because you're just about off the clock here. Where do you think we might see Jerry Brown next?
Oh, I think that's such an interesting question. You know, he is still the UN's special advisor. He has an official role with the UN as their sort of ambassador for states and regions on climate change. I think we've seen this be his defining issue as governor. I don't expect that we'll see that stopping. On the other hand, you know, it's just interesting what happens when people lose their main hold on power. We saw that, you know, SB 100, which we were talking about earlier today, the Senate leader, Kevin De Leon, that's his bill. And it went from him pushing it through to all of a sudden he was no longer the head of the Senate. And you heard a lot of talk about it. There was definitely some score settling in the assembly with people not voting for it. So that'll be interesting to see. But Brown, even though he says he's going to go retire to his farm in Colusa County, his ranch in Colusa County, he still has millions of dollars in a campaign war chest, and that's right. Not just going to sit there.
Well, thank you. You've been an excellent reporter, really terrific to work with, a fun personality in the newsroom, and everybody wishes you the best. We'll look forward to hearing you on Marketplace.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ben. You can find more information online at capradio.org/insight. And by the way, as we go to break, you're going to hear music by Ben Bradford's brother, who has visited us on the entertainment side of things. So here you go. We'll be back after a short break.